shadows. She hurried toward him at once. "Papa, you're all right." "You found me." Her father's mouth curled into a slow smile. "Well done." Riel froze. He extended his hand, grey eyes unblinking on her face. She brushed past him, searching the room's shadows. "Manipulating my father's mind," she declared, "is not the way to win my heart."
"Shall I release him, then?" murmured a voice.
She whirled at the sound. A column of still black watched her from the corner. Her mouth went dry. Her heart skipped up her throat. "Release all of them," she ordered.
"As you wish."
A ripple shifted through the room. Lord Dervin looked around in confusion, his eyes clearing. King Bastian shot to his feet.
"What is the meaning of this? Why are we all here?"
He glared at Riel's father.
"Armand?"
"I don't know, my king."
At the touch of her father's hands, Riel turned to face him.
"Papa, I'm so sorry."
"Are you hurt?"
He smoothed back her hair.
"What's happening here?"
"Riel is leaving you, I'm afraid."
Riel turned. And there he was.
"Corian."
He moved slowly across the room, light blue eyes fixed on her face. Tall and slender, hands held carefully behind his back, sleek dark coat buttoned at his shoulder and trailing to the floor. Pale face, cheekbones high and elegant, a full mouth that curved with delight at the sight of her. Riel's breath came high and thin. Her dreams, as vivid as they had been, had not done him justice.
"My God, Riel," he murmured, his hungry gaze raking down her body. "I didn't think it possible. But you are even more exquisite now than you are in my mind."
Her father stiffened with fury at her side.
"Riel, you know this man?" "Who are you?"
King Bastian stepped forward, a furious expression on his face.
"Why have you brought us here?"
Corian took one step closer to Riel, then another. His eyes never left her face.
"I wanted to make sure Riel didn't run from me. And you won't, will you? Not with all these very important men so dangerously close to me."
"You won't hurt them," she shook her head, her voice cracking. "I forbid it."
"Queen of my heart," murmured Corian, putting a gloved hand to his chest. "My greatest wish is to please you. But you must promise to leave this place with me tonight. Or I'm sorry to say, you will force my hand."
Panic and craving waged a war in her chest.
"But I can't. I need more time."
"More time? For what? To be poked and prodded, studied by lecherous magisters, and ordered around by an idiotic king too frightened to face the truth."
Lord Dervin stared at his hands.
"I never meant for this to happen."
Corian laughed.
"As if you could have stopped it."
"Riel, who is this man?" her father demanded. "And why does he talk to you this way?"
"He's an angel,"
Riel bit out. Corian's eyes flared with displeasure, even as his smile grew. King Bastian drew his sword. So did Riel's father, shoving her behind him.
"That's impossible."
King Bastian looked as though someone had kicked him in the gut.
"The gate is strong. It was meant to hold for a long time," Corian snapped.
"Not forever."
"Riel, it's time to go. Unless you'd like me to demonstrate firsthand what I'm capable of."
Riel swallowed hard and moved toward him, her power itching to touch him, even as her mind screamed to stay put. But her father threw out his arm and stopped her.
"You will stay away from my daughter, whatever you are," he said, "or I will do what? Kill me," Corian chuckled. "My dear man, I'd like to see you try."
Riel's father didn't hesitate. He lunged at Corian, raised his sword to strike. Then his body jerked, his eyes clouded over, and his sword crashed to the ground.
"No!"
Riel ran to him. He looked at her, head tilted unnaturally to the side, and struck her hard across the face. Riel staggered to the cave wall. When she touched her lip, her fingers came away red.
"Interesting," said Corian calmly. "I only told him to stop you. His mind was the one that chose to strike you."
He turned to her, and she could feel through their connection a twinge of genuine sadness.
"Could your father be angry at you for something? I thought you two had put that mess behind you."
Riel glared at him.
"Release him, or I will destroy you."
"If you try, they'll be dead before I hit the ground."
Tears gathered in her eyes.
"I thought you..."
"That I loved you?"
Corian's face softened.
"Child, I love you more than I can say. I'm doing this for you. If you don't leave them, they will stifle shame and punish you for daring to breach the walls they are building around you."
He approached her slowly.
"They will use every memory you share with them, every sweet feeling, every kind moment, to wring out all the power they can from that miraculous body of yours. And they won't stop, or even consider sparing you, because they will be too afraid of what faces them. If you hesitate, they will remind you of their supposed love for you, and chain you with it until you back down and do as you're told."
He now stood so close she could smell the clean coldness of his skin, a spice of scent on his clothes. He cupped her cheek in one gloved hand. Heat blazed through her body, her power firing so completely alive at his touch that she felt fevered. Helplessly, she turned into his palm.
"Yes," Corian lowered his head to whisper against her ear. "Even him."
"Hordrick, you're wrong." She desperately hoped it was true.
"He loves me, and he always will."
Corian's pity caressed her mind.
"Who told you that? The rat?"
And as he said the words, an image came to her, shoved violently across the plane of her thoughts. Hordrick crying out in pain on Etheria's back. The Chevelle landed on a grassy plateau seconds before Hordrick hit the ground. He dropped Illuminor, clutched his head in his hands. His eyes flickered from a brilliant, stormy grey to brown and back to grey. The image vanished, and though Riel couldn't know if it was real or imagined, it was enough. Rage erupted in her heart.
"You will not touch him,"
she growled. Corian stepped back from her.
"Riel,
wait." She rounded on him, thrust out her palm, screamed, "Get away from me!" And let her power fly. Not the wind, not the earth or the shadows lining the room. This power was more than that, and all of it
and none of it. Simply, it was this. The Imperium, raw and blinding. At Riel's feet, the unseen fabric of the world split open and detonated. A wave of light, a savage shudder. Not far, but far enough. When the aftershock dimmed, Riel was on the floor, her head spun. She looked down at her palms. They were covered in blood. Her own? She blinked. Yes. The pain surfaced in sharp, jagged waves. And Corian? She looked around, dizzy, heard a horrible, keening sound, and found him crawling away from her, his clothes burned to ashes, and his body. The blast had burned him. He was an unmade creature, red and ravaged and glistening. He howled in pain, dragging himself across the cave floor toward an opening that led back to the hills. "Don't look at me!" he screamed at her, his words slurring. "Not like this! Not like this!" She could see not a single recognizable feature on his face, but his agony, his shame, his anger vibrated through her mind. When she looked up again, he was gone. Then a low cry sounded from across the cave, her father struggling to breathe, and beyond him, King Bastian, Lord Dervin. Still, both of them, still. Not burnt, as Corian had been, but rigid. The light gone from their glassy eyes, their faces frozen in shock. Riel tried to rise, crashed back to her knees. "Papa!" She crawled to him, turned his face to her. He gulped down air, his eyes dim. "I'm here!" She touched his face. His cheeks were wet with tears. "It's all right. He's gone. And I'm here. We just need... Oh, God." She turned to the cave passage down which she'd come, screamed her voice raw. "I need a healer! Someone, please help us! Garva!"
"I remember."
"Papa? What is it?" She held his hands against her cheek. "You remember what?"
"By the moon."
He gulped emptily at the air.
"By the..."
"Mama's lullaby." He gave her a shaky smile.
By
the moon," she finished, singing unsteadily. "By the moon. That's where you'll find me." He nodded, closed his eyes. Tears slipped down his cheeks and into his neatly trimmed beard. A ghost of a smile touched his mouth. "We'll pray to the stars," she continued, a mere whisper, "and ask them to set us free. By the moon." He shuddered once, his hands falling slack in hers. She closed her eyes, pressed her face against his fingers. If she finished the lullaby, if she didn't look, then it wasn't really happening. "By the moon," she whispered. "By the moon. That's where you'll find me. We'll hold hands, just you and me." She could no longer speak. She curled up beside him, pressed her face into his side, and lay there shivering and alone.
A familiar cry pierced the air outside the chamber, shaking Riel from her grief. A gust of wind, followed by stamping hooves, announced Etheria's arrival just beyond the door through which Corian had crawled. She sat up, her heart pounding. Ordric, what would she tell him? He rushed through the door an instant later, windblown and frantic. Riel?
Here,
she croaked. She tried to go to him, but her legs wouldn't work. She instead watched with mounting dread as Ordric hurried to her, then faltered with a sharp cry, and then stared in horror at his father's frozen face. Riel, at last, found the strength to rise.
I tried to stop him, she whispered, approaching him slowly. I'm sorry. I burned him. He's terribly wounded, but...
She gestured at the floor where the smears of Corian's bloody body marked his exit.
It wasn't enough. Ordric, I'm so sorry.
Who? Who did you burn?
His name is Corian, she managed. He's an angel, Ordric. He turned the Sevillier men against us. And Ludovine.
Despair crushed her, left her choked with tears. And that was good. That was true and real. For when Ordric turned to her, saw the blood dripping down her fingers and the mark of her father's hand across her cheek, his shocked expression shattered, and he gathered her tightly in his arms.
Thank God you're all right,
he whispered into her hair, his voice thick.
Riel, I thought I'd lost you.
She wrapped her arms around him, shook her head against his chest.
Never. Never.
You lie,
Corian's voice whispered, thin with pain.
Even now, you lie to him.
She felt Aldric's shoulders shake under her hands and helped him sink to the floor.
It's all right,
she whispered as he wept against her neck. She took comfort from knowing that at least this one small fact was not a lie. And the truest thing she knew in this place of death.
I'm here, Ordric. And I love you.
Chapter 48 Eliana. In these dark times, not even the light of the Sun Queen is as powerful as the light waiting inside our deepest hearts. If we only have the courage to look for it. The Word of the Prophet.
Hurry up, Eliana whispered, crouching behind a stack of crates marked with the Empire's winged emblem. The dock was slick beneath her feet, the frigid air sour and salty.
They're disembarking,
Zara sighed irritably.
I'm trying. There's a lot going on here, you know. Wait,
Eliana tensed.
Did you find him? Perhaps. Stay here.
Zara disappeared into the night. Eliana watched two uniformed Adatrochs patrol the deck of the ship to her right. A distant boom sounded from far across the water. She peered around the crates, down the narrow pier, and out to sea. Another boom snapped like an approaching thunderclap. And then another, each accompanied by distant flares of light against the starlit sky. The main fleet, steadily moving toward Astavar, had begun to fire its guns.
Come on! Come on! Eliana muttered.
The far ship,
Zara said, appearing so suddenly that Eliana jumped.
The sleek black one, smaller than the others, with a thick hull. That's where they are.
Eliana let out a slow breath. That might be a general's boat. Ready?
Zara put a shifting dark hand on Eliana's wrist.
Remember what I told you about my limited power since the fall. I will only be able to mask your presence for a few minutes, at the most, before needing to rest again.
Uneasy, Eliana nodded.
Save it for when we're actually on the ship. I can get there unseen on my own.
She closed her eyes, said a quick prayer to Saint Tamarin that she would hide Remy and the others on the smuggler's boat, and that they would reach Astavar before the fleet did.
May the Queen's light guide them home, Zara murmured.
Eliana shot her a look. Zara shook back her hair.
What? I can't pray to you now that we're friends?
Eliana rolled her eyes, then darted out from behind the crates and followed the docks to the farthest pier, keeping to the shadows. Suddenly, Zara moaned.
Oh, no!
What?
Eliana crouched beside a railing, draped with netting, and wiped her brow.
Wait. Where's the ship?
Out there.
Zara pointed at a black ship slicing out across the water.
Oh, sweet saints!
Eliana hissed.
Can nothing in this world be easy?
She made sure her knives were secure, then dove into the freezing water.
Hurry! Zara cried above the choppy waves. They're speeding up!
Eliana kicked desperately, her teeth chattering, then threw herself at the ship's hull and grabbed a black line hanging down from the deck. At her grip, it came loose from its knot, sliding fast, and she plunged back into the sea. But she held tight and pulled herself along the rope's length until she reached the ship once more, muscles burning from her frantic swim. She climbed.
I insist upon hiding you now, Zara whispered, floating nervously around her.
Eliana glanced up at the deck.
Not yet.
An Anatrox leaned over the steel deck railing, peering down at the taut, swinging line. Before he could raise his weapon, Eliana launched herself over the railing, grabbed Nox from her boot, and plunged it into his stomach. She clamped her hand over his mouth, then staggered with him to the railing and shoved him over the side. From down the deck came footsteps, approaching fast.
Now?
Zara asked. Eliana hated to waste the precious few minutes Zara would give her, but capture was not an option.
Now,
follow me closely.
Zara sped along the port side deck, the world shifting in her wake. As long as Eliana stayed safe in that distorted space, no one could see her, though someone would see the trail of seawater she left behind soon enough. They passed Adatrox, staring blankly outside closed doors, patrolling side by side along the deck rails. Zara beckoned at a door ahead on their right. An Adatrox stood beside it, revolver in hand. Eliana flattened herself against the wall, hoping the shadows would hide her. Zara moved away, then disappeared. 2 seconds later, the Adatrox stiffened, his already vacant eyes turning even glassier. Eliana hurried over, glancing behind her as she ran. With Zara occupied, she felt horribly exposed.
The fat silver one,
Zara whispered through the Adatrox's mouth, the voice part wraith, part man. Eliana grabbed the fat silver key from the ring at his belt, unlocked the door, and let herself inside. She waited just beyond the door for Zara to drift through the wall and join her. Zara shuddered.
Never enter an Adatrox's mind if you can help it, Eliana.
Nasty place.
I'll try to remember that. A vacant hallway stretched to either side. Moonlight pouring through the round portholes in the wall was the only illumination.
Where do we go?
With one long arm, Zara pointed down the narrow, dark stairwell in front of them.
He has him below.
Rosavel. Eliana hurried down the stairs. At the bottom, Zara buckled over with a gasp. Eliana hid against the wall, looked quickly up and down the stairs. What is it?
Simon's in great pain, Zara muttered. Hurry!
Heart pounding, following Zara's whispered instructions, Eliana raced through a maze of corridors, staying in the Wraith's wake to avoid the Adatrox bustling from cabin to cabin. It was unbearably dark and close below decks, even with flickering gas lamps screwed into the walls. At last, Zara brought her to a solid metal door cloaked in shadows.
In here,
Zara whispered. Eliana stared at the door's handle, fear pounding hard against her breastbone. Arabeth in one hand, she held her breath and turned the handle. The door opened easily.
That seems ominous,
Zara whispered. Eliana stepped inside and closed the door behind them. It was a small room, dark and choked with hissing pipes. And in the center of it, lit by a single hanging gas lamp, was Simon. Eliana faltered at the sight of him. He had been bound with black rope to a pole that spanned from floor to ceiling, his arms wrenched cruelly behind him. His torso was bare and blood-spattered, the scarred flesh torn to pieces from new wounds. Carvings.
Simon.
She whispered, moving slowly to stand before him. His head hung low, his eyes closed. The thought that he might already be dead brought a terrible sadness crashing down upon her, so unexpected that the shock of it made her throat ache.
Please be alive.
His head jerked up at the sound of her voice.
Eliana.
She saw his eyes and recoiled. They were bloodshot and yellowed. The brilliant blue irises turned dull and cloudy. She smoothed her thumb across one of the few patches of skin not covered with blood.
You're going to owe me so much after this,
her voice came out shaky.
Do you know how cold that water is? No. No.
Simon struggled against the ropes.
Get out of here! Run!
Beside Eliana, Zara shifted in surprise.
Look out!
Eliana whirled to see Razavel emerge from the shadows, a thin sword in each hand.
Hello, Eliana, he crooned. Welcome to the end of your story.
Why didn't I sense him?
Zara whispered, her voice tight with anger under the hissing of the pipes. Then her form stiffened.
The Emperor's touch is heavy upon him. We must leave, my queen, before Corrin finds you. Eliana! Leave me!
Simon howled, yanking hard at his bindings.
I'm not going anywhere!
Eliana watched Razavel approach, noticed the red sprays across his face, and how his dark uniform glistened with blood. Simon's blood, she assumed.
How right you are, said Razavel. You know, don't you, that if you try to kill me, you'll fail. And if you make even one move at me, one fucking move, then I'll kill you first and make him watch.
He pointed his sword at Simon and grinned.
Either way, your little rescue mission will be for nothing.
Eliana, please run,
Simon cried. Razavel batted his eyelashes, whimpering.
Leave me. Oh, my darling, darling Eliana, save yourself.
Eliana,
whispered Zara, floating tensely beside her.
Shut up!
Eliana snapped, eyes trained on Razavel's lithe form, watching how he moved, gauging the weight of his swords and the size of the room.
No, I don't think I will shut up. Thank you.
Razavel sauntered around Simon.
In fact, I think I'd like to tell you a story. It's about a bounty hunter who thought she was invincible. But really, she was just a fool bitch who got lucky one too many times.
God, I'm sick of listening to you, Eliana ground out, her body itching to move.
Then a thought came to her. She looked to Zara, raised an eyebrow.
My queen, Zara murmured, if I do this, I may not have the strength for anything else.
Do it. Now!
The wraith shot toward Roosevelt and dove straight into his smiling mouth. Roosevelt staggered back, choking. He dropped his swords and clutched his face, stumbled back against a knot of piping.
What is this?
His warped voice shook with the weight of Zara's anger. He clawed at his clothes, at his hair.
What is it, Dredd? What have you done? What's inside me? A wraith!
Eliana stormed over, grabbed his shirt in her fist, and slammed him to the floor.
I'm afraid, Razavel, she replied, straddling his chest and wedging Arabeth's jagged blade against his throat. That this is the end of your story.
Then she slashed open his throat, rose calmly to her feet, and left him choking where he'd fallen. Zara drifted up from his body and clapped her hands together as if wiping them clean. A few seconds later, all was silent. Until two explosions shook the world. The ship shuddered and moaned. From outside came the shouts of Adatrox, the frantic clap of boots against the decks. Eliana froze.
What was that?
Zara cocked her head, listening. Then her face darkened. An ink blot dropped into grey waters.
It has begun, she whispered. The fleet has engaged Astaroth.
Eliana ran to Simon, started cutting at the ropes that bound him.
I told you to leave, Simon rasped as she worked. You didn't listen to me.
Does that surprise you? She came around to cut the last two ropes. When he fell free, she tried to hold him up, bear his weight as best she could. But she was exhausted, and it had been too long since a proper meal. Her knees buckled. She sank with him to the floor, swearing under her breath.
All right, she said, trying to slide out from under him.
But his body was a dead weight, pinning her to the floor.
Come on, get up. We have to get off this boat and make it to shore, while everyone's shooting at each other. Doesn't that sound fun?
He didn't answer her. He was laughing, looking up at her from his spot on her lap, and laughing at her.
Oh, Eliana, dull tears slid out of his eyes. If only you knew. There are so many stories I need to tell you.
I'm sure that's true. But can we do it later? She shoved at him again, but he was shaking with laughter now, and wouldn't budge.
I've seen this before, Zara pointed at his eyes. During the invasion. Poison gas.
You're saying he's blind?
For now. Sometimes the eyes repair themselves. Other times...
Wonderful! That makes everything easier. Simon, she slapped him lightly on the cheek. If you don't move, I'm going to get angry.
Do it, Simon whispered.
Get angry for me, sweet, sweet Eliana.
He raised a trembling hand to her face, smoothed his thumb across her cheek.
It's just what I want.
I'm hardly sweet, she protested with a slightly nervous laugh.
They ought to be moving, but she could not tear herself away from him.
I can't see you very well, he said.
A blur of color. Shadows for eyes. But I know your face even so. I'd know it anywhere.
You're speaking nonsense. Do you know that?
I didn't tell him anything, Simon whispered urgently. I would never, never. Not about you. He could have cut on me until the end of time. He could have whispered in my ears until he killed me from the inside out.
He laughed again, but it sounded horribly sad.
It wouldn't matter. I'd never tell him about you.
She watched him struggle to his knees, dig for something in his trouser pocket.
Where is it?
He whispered. The ship shuddered once more. Rapid gunfire sounded from above. A horrible scraping sound shrieked along the hull.
Simon, we have to go.
Where is it?
He yelled the question, a sob tearing his voice in two.
I lost it. I lost you.
Then, with a small cry, he pulled a filthy rag from his pocket and held it out for Eliana to see.
This, he murmured, belongs to you.
She stared at the rag, at a loss. Was his mind breaking at last? Hovering at Eliana's elbow, Zara shook her head.
I cannot see inside him. His thoughts are tangled with storms. I tried to hold on to you.
Simon fumbled to fold the rag into her fingers. Then he lifted their joined hands to his lips and kissed her knuckles.
But I couldn't. The thread was too strong for me. I was too young for it. And then your mother.
My mother.
The Blood Queen. If she believed that. Did she believe it? Tears gathered in her eyes. They didn't have time for this. But if she moved away, the moment would snap, and she might never find it again.
Simon, what are you saying?
We are the only two left, Eliana. You and me. The only two left who lived there.
She ducked down to look at his face.
Where did we live? Tell me.
Zeldaria.
He drew in a shuddering breath.
I tried to hold on to you, but time tore you away from me. We were only supposed to go to Borsval. They were going to hide us from him.
All the air left her lungs. Her mind raced.
From who? Corian.
He'll never touch you. I lost you once, but I won't ever again.
She kept her hands folded around the little scrap of rag. Out of all things, she couldn't move past one tiny question.
But what is this?
He looked down at the rag cupped in her palms and smiled.
Your blanket.
The sorrow in his voice pierced her heart.
She wrapped you up in it. And when the thread ripped you out of my arms, it tore. I've kept this piece with me because it reminds me of everything. Of home. We were so small, Eliana. And then I brought us here and ruined everything. I failed you. I failed everyone.
An explosion detonated. The ship rocked, heaving them both to the side.
Eliana,
Zara said tightly.
I know.
Eliana cupped Simon's face, looked into his ruined eyes.
We're going to run now, and I can't carry you. You have to help me. Just like you did before in...
Her voice caught. Her necklace felt too sharp and cold beneath her skirt.
In Zeldaria, right?
He nodded, then heaved himself to his feet. She propped him up against her side, slung her arm around his shoulder. Zara leading the way, they limped out into the corridor and up the narrow stairs. Another explosion sounded, knocking them against the wall. Eliana hissed at the slam of Simon's hard weight.
Just give me a moment, he said, his face tight with pain. And then I'll walk on my own.
I'm sorry. I know you're hurt.
Don't apologize to me, Eliana. Not ever.
When they stepped outside onto the main deck, Eliana stopped cold. A broad bay, flanked with tall, jagged rocks and scattered with small icebergs, stretched before them. Two lines of ships faced each other across a narrow expanse of black water choked with flaming wreckage. Beyond the water, crowded with soldiers, a white beach hugged a cluster of night-shrouded hills.
Astavar.
She stepped out from under Simon's arm, made sure he could stand.
Zara, can you hide us?
Zara shook her head, mouth in a frustrated line. Her form faded and flickered back whole.
I don't think so, my queen.
Eliana exhaled.
Perfect. Stay close to me. Step where I fly. I'll find the best path I can for you.
We survived the end of the world. You and I, Simon murmured, squeezing Eliana's fingers. His breath puffed in the air.
We'll survive this, too.
A chill seized her at his words. Then she tightened her grip on his hand, and they ran. Chapter 49 Riel. Onto this bleak and unknown path, born from loss and paved with wrath, cast down your heart and light the way from darkest night to brightest day. The Song of Saint Cattell, unknown composer. Riel stepped inside the Hall of Saints, her heart racing. This was wrong. To be in this room, wearing a glittering gown with Bastion's body not yet interred in the catacombs, with the kingdom grieving their dead and the loss of their king. It felt thoughtless, even cruel for this to be the day that the Archon crowned her Sun Queen. It would have felt cruel, even if she hadn't been the one to kill them all. But the Archon had insisted upon it.
Saint Cattell's writings require that the Sun Queen, when she comes, be crowned on a solstice,
he had explained to her the day after the fire trial massacre, her ears still ringing with the sounds of death.
We timed your trials for precisely this reason. You know this, Lady Riel.
She'd closed her eyes. A mistake. Every time she did so, she saw Ludovine falling to her death. After days of searching the maze's smoking rubble, they hadn't even been able to find her body.
Yes, I know, Riel managed, her voice thick. But perhaps, given recent events, the church could—
No,
the Archon searched her face. She wondered what he would find. Did he look into her eyes and see what her father had always seen? The soul of a murderer?
Now more than ever, Lady Riel,
the Archon had said.
Our people need hope. We cannot wait until the winter solstice to crown you. Seldarians need their Sun Queen to help them through the days to come.
And what hope, she wanted to ask, can they possibly find in a killer such as me? In the Hall of Saints, Riel closed her eyes to fight back tears. Were it not for her, Corian would not have invaded the fire trial. The Sevillier soldiers he'd entrapped would be at home in the north, and those innocents who had died in the hillside skirmish would be alive. Ludovine. Papa, King Bastion, Lord Dervin. The names cycled constantly through her mind, nicking away at the crumbling shell of her heart. Ludovine. The final count, according to the Lord of Letters' report, was 58 dead. Their blood now coated her hands, and she could not reveal the truth about why. Not yet. Not ever. Maybe if Ludovine were still alive, Riel would have dared confess to her.
Ludovine, she thought, despairing. I'm so sorry.
She opened her eyes to the waiting crowd, managed a solemn smile. The entirety of King Bastian's court and the city's elite had gathered inside the hall. Outside Banegard, a throng of citizens waited in the stone yard at the castle's entrance. At midday, after the Archon's blessing, the solstice bells would ring. Riel looked ahead at the gold-plated altar, shining under the light of 1,000 candles. The Archon waited for her in his formal robes. Behind him, in the rafters, stood a choir of temple acolytes singing the Song of Saint Catel. She took a deep breath and began the long walk toward him, leaving her guards standing at the doors. Weeks ago she had made this same journey, frightened and uncertain beneath the stern eyes of the saints. On that day, the hall had been mostly empty, and her walk had been lined with guards prepared to kill her. But today, the crowded room watched her progress with shining eyes. Reverent whispers rippled through them as she passed. Ludovine had, apparently, commissioned the gown without Riel's knowledge. Ludovine's red-eyed servants had brought it to Riel 3 days before for final adjustments. She had taken one look at the gown and barely managed to send the servants away in time before losing her composure. It was a vision in pale Astavari lace. The wide neckline left her shoulders bare. Long, airy sleeves fell to the floor, trailing beside the train of her skirt. A shimmering iridescent lining clung to her torso, shining through the lace's fine weave. The effect made her look as though she had been dipped in liquid sunlight. Ludovine's servants had begged permission to weave fine golden ribbons through the dark fall of her hair and paint glittering amber swirls around her eyes.
Lady Ludovine would want us to take care of you, the eldest of them had said, her mouth trembling, and make you resplendent as the sun, my lady. And so we shall.
But walking through the hall, Riel cared nothing for the gown, nor the murmurs of appreciation from the people she passed. Her fingers itched to clutch the necklace at her throat. Instead, she found Audric sitting beside his father's empty throne, and took comfort from the weary warmth of his eyes. He'd given the necklace to her that morning, knocking at her door when she was still bleary-eyed from yet another sleepless night. "For you," he had said simply, and folded the necklace into her hand. He'd kissed her knuckles and the inside of her wrist, closed his eyes and let his mouth linger against her skin. Standing a few feet away, with her gaze resolutely on the wall, Eveline had cleared her throat.
"Audric," Riel had said, her voice breaking, "must I do this thing? With our fathers not even given proper rights?"
"Today, the sun will shine long and bright,"
he touched her face, his own worn with grief.
"But not as bright as you. Please, Riel. Our people need to see you."
Now, a smooth white-gold sun sat on a delicate chain between her collarbones. Its broad rays fanned out in gilded leaves, thin as butterfly wings. And when Riel knelt before the Archon, the light fell upon it and sent a sunburst flying across the ceiling. The Archon placed a hand, heavy with rings, on her bowed head.
"The gate will fall," he began, the familiar words of Ayava's prophecy bringing a hush to the room. The choir's voices softened. the angels will return and bring ruin to the world. You will know this time by the rise of two human queens, one of blood and one of light, one with the power to save the world, one with the power to destroy it. Two queens will rise. They will carry the power of the seven. They will carry your fate in their hands. Two queens will rise.
One of blood, one of light. Riel stared at her clasped hands, longed to scrub them clean. Her clammy skin itched. She had a vision of herself, peeling it away to reveal the roiling black truth of what lay beneath. The Archon stepped back from her.
Lady Riel Darden, you have passed the trials set before you by the Church and withstood great danger in doing so. This kingdom has watched you carefully over the past few weeks, and your power is unlike anything we have seen. Tell us then, Lady Riel, which queen are you?
One of blood. One of blood. Riel met the Archon's eyes. I am the Queen of Light, Your Holiness, and I will serve Zeldaria proudly until the end of my days. The Archon smiled and extended his hand.
Then rise, Lady Riel, and let us begin.
A cry from the back of the hall interrupted him, followed by another, then a third. A clamour of astonishment and fear filled the room. The Archon's face paled, his eyes fixed on something behind Riel. He took a step back, reaching for his chair. Audric shot to his feet, his hand around his mother's. Queen Genevieve's soft cry came out shattered. Riel turned, dread plugging her lungs. Was it Corian? Had he come ready to shout the truth of what she was for all to hear? It was not Corian. Ludivine, barefoot, hair a tumble of gold, stepped out of the crowd. She clutched a tattered cloak at her throat and hips. Beneath it, she wore nothing. Her skin was ashen, but whole. She was alive. She was alive! Riel made a choked sound, swaying where she stood. Ludivine climbed the altar steps, caught Riel's hands with one of her own. Her touch was warm, familiar. She turned to face the room. Out loud, Ludivine's shaking voice rose above the crowd's stunned voices. I know this is startling. Even frightening. Please, forgive me. Inside Riel's mind, Ludivine whispered, I'm so sorry you had to find out like this. Please, trust me. We must be careful. Riel's shock crashed painfully through her body, as if she'd been struck across her shoulders. Ludivine's iron grip kept her standing. I don't know how to explain it to you. Ludivine continued. The last things I remember are a fog. Lady Riel fighting a group of metal masters. Rogues from House Sevillier. My own father's house. Ludivine's voice trailed off, heavy with sadness. We must convince them. All of them. Lou, Riel whispered, shaking. It's all right. Please, my darling. Don't fear me. I remember a weapon striking me in the stomach, Ludivine went on. I remember falling. Suddenly Audric was there beside them. He unclasped his long dress cloak and wrapped it around Ludivine's shoulders. Riel was glad for the solid warmth of his body, anchoring her to her own breath, her own wildly pounding heart. This was not, then, a dream.
Not a dream,
Ludovine's thoughts came gently.
It is the truth, at last.
But they cannot know it. None of them.
You all thought I had died,
said Ludovine, reaching for Audric's hand. Gingerly, he took it.
I thought I had too. But then I felt a power rise up beneath the earth and breathe life back into me. I felt a familiar touch, and I looked round for Lady Riel, but she wasn't there. Her power, however, that was all around me. It lingered from her trial. It gave me back my body and my life.
Trust me.
Riel's thoughts raced. Trust her? Trust who? What was this creature? This was not Ludovine. This was an imposter.
You're wrong. It is me, truly. Please, if you ever loved me, you'll trust me just for a little while. Then I'll explain everything.
Riel could hardly breathe. Her tears gathered fast.
I didn't bring you back. I don't understand. But you will. Soon. I promise. We have always known that the Sun Queen, when she came, would protect our kingdom from those who wish harm upon us.
Ludovine's voice shook with emotion.
But now she is here, and her power is even greater than we have believed. She not only carries the power of the Seven, as the prophecy foretold.
Ludovine knelt at the hem of Riel's glittering train.
She carries the power to bring life to that which has died. Trust me. Quickly.
In Riel's mind, Ludovine stood firm.
They must believe me. They must accept this now, or all is ruined.
Riel, is this true? Audric murmured, his face awash with confusion and a trace of fear. Did you do this? Fighting the urge to collapse, Riel placed her hand on Ludovine's bowed head.
I'm sorry all of you had to find out like this, she said, echoing Ludovine's words.
She lifted her eyes to the crowd, summoning a serenity to her face that she did not feel. Her mind raced through its shock to find words, any words that would make sense.
The trials had deepened my power in ways I could not expect, but I did not want to raise any hopes before I was sure it would work, before I could be sure that I had indeed brought our Lady Ludovine back to us.
Good.
Ludovine's relief came as a caress.
Very good. I only wish...
Riel's voice failed her.
I only wish I were powerful enough to save everyone we lost that day.
Audric's gentle touch at the small of her back kept her standing. But she could not look at him. She didn't trust her face to hide what she needed it to. Ludovine smiled up at her.
You save me, Lady Riel, as you did all of us here today. You faced a great evil right here in our beloved city, and vanquished it. Your power is a marvel, and we owe you our lives.
Then Ludovine kissed Riel's hand, and as Riel watched through a humming veil of astonishment, the nearest in the crowd sank to their knees. Others followed, and still more, until the entire room, 100 strong, had knelt before her.
Long live the Sun Queen!
Ludovine's jubilant voice rang out, and others immediately took up the call. Midday sunlight streamed through the high windows to paint their tearful faces gold. Lower in the city, the solstice bells of the House of Light began to chime. Looking out over the crowd, Riel noticed a small handful of people in the room not repeating Ludovine's cry. They knelt, the same as the rest, but watched Riel with faces of silent stone. A shiver of worry climbed up her